Doogie.
Sam.
Harry Kane's form this season has been otherworldly, and it prompts a question. Where does he rank among the great strikers of the last decade or so? Let's dig in.
Still going, Kane! Harry Kane reaches 100 goals for Bayern. He's done it more quickly than anyone in the club's history. It's taken him just 104 games.
Welcome, the record man. You scored 100 goals in 104 matches for Bayern Munich. This is a record nobody realized before in the big leagues.
Undoubtedly respected and rated as a great player, but not always spoken of amongst the elites in his generation.
For me, he's the greatest ever England man.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Truth. Sam Tai here, back in the hosting chair. It is warmer, it is more comfortable, I like it here. Joining me is Doogie Critchley. Hello, my friend.
Hello, Sam. I'm sensing a lot of joy in your voice. Is that because Villa won a game?
Yes, we are technically on a two-game win streak. We're recording this on Wednesday night, I should say, because we do actually have a game to play against Feyenoord away on Thursday. So the win streak could be over by the time people listen to this. But as we sit here today, two-game win streak. Two wins in a row.
On fire.
Consecutive games that were won. Amazing. One was Bologna, but one was Fulham. I did say last week it is written into the Football Association rulebook that Aston Villa will beat Fulham at home. And if they didn't do so this weekend, you knew something was up. And true to form, Villa did the business. Three goals as well, Doogie. Three goals.
Fair amount of luck, I would say, as well.
Let's introduce our producer, our overlord, our Fulham fan, Jack. Hello, my friend.
Hello, Sam. How you doing?
Really good. How are you?
Yeah, you know what? I've been better. I've been better. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, at least I was the one that texted you on Sunday.
You made me feel a lot better by texting me things like, I'd really like it if the ref gave you a decision at some point. Things like that. That did soften the blow a little bit.
It was bizarre. I genuinely, you know, sometimes a lot of fans sort of struggle to see the wood for the trees with this kind of things. But I like to think, as a 15-year journalist, I can detach myself enough to realise when a refereeing performance is working in my team's favour. And it was very weird to watch. Like, okay, you can check the rule book and have your consternations over the two penalty claims, but the fact that you didn't get either one in the span of 90 minutes was a bit weird. But then there was other things, like, I feel like as soon as a Fulham player breathed on a Villa player and got knocked over, the ref blew up for a free kick, and then Lamar Bogard would just scythe someone in the middle and the ref would be like, play on, fair challenge. So it was amusing to watch, but at the same time, I did feel for you a little bit, and I feel like that game could quite easily have been 2-0 to Fulham. And then we're talking about a completely different scenario.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, from the other side of it, like, I was more upset with Fulham's capitulation to concede just before half time against a Villa side lacking in confidence to Ollie Watkins, who hadn't scored a goal in, you know, however long. You know, at points you have to shoot yourself in the foot, right? Like, you've got to help yourself out.
Yep.
And then to collapse and concede two goals in 2 minutes. It was very much like the FA Cup quarterfinal against Crystal Palace last season, where Fulham were in control of the game and then they just weren't in control of the game and they were two goals behind and you know, you kind of shrug. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's a certain couple of things didn't go our way that obviously were frustrating, but equally you can't do that to yourselves as well. So, you know,
yeah,
6-1, half a dozen of the
others. It's a lot of football is about responding to adversity in the right way. And for the first time this season, Aston Villa did that and Fulham did not, effectively. So, yeah, it is a 90-minute game. But I did feel for you a little bit there. Only a little bit, though, because we won.
You need it.
Doogie, your team won too.
We won.
Again.
Yeah. We can't stop it, man. I'm not ruling out anything. European charge on the table. We've got Man United away this weekend. No, in all seriousness, we look very, very, very well organised. I don't think we're necessarily going to thrill anyone with our football, but it's so refreshing to see, after the debacles of Burnley and Southampton, trying to play this very progressive football in the last few years, that just setting up with the right shape, with the right gaps between midfield and defenders, and some absolutely monster centre-backs in Alderete and Mukiele, we look really, really competitive in every game. And yes, we rode our luck massively in the final 30 minutes of that game against Forest. But Alderete's goal put us ahead. We managed to hold on just about. And Robin Roof's in goal. Yep. Got a new hero, man.
Yeah,
he's epic.
That's most XGA prevented in the Premier League so far this
Loving
season.
It.
Looking really good. Right, well, I'm starting to see why you brought so many players in this summer. Because you'll need that squad depth for Thursday nights next season on your European
Fingers
charge.
Crossed.
Speaking of continental nights, Harry Kane has just enjoyed another one, and he is the subject of our episode today, Doogie. Go ahead and tell us why.
Yeah, it's been a pretty wild start to the season for Harry Kane, even by his Bayern standards, which have been through the roof. I'm sure everyone with a social media account of any sort of type would have seen about 10 days ago that he became the fastest player to 100 goals for a club in Europe's top five leagues in just 104 games with the brace against Werder Bremen.
Beating who by one game?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
And
Erling Haaland.
Correct.
Yeah.
They got to 100 goals in 105 games.
Absolutely remarkable. And 17 of those goals now have come in 9 games in all competitions this season. 17 in nine. It is absolutely crazy. He's already scored 2 hat-tricks this season. Nice. Against RB Leipzig and Hoffenheim. He's now on 9 Bundesliga hat-tricks. Gerd Müller is way, way ahead. But then Lewandowski's got 16. And third place Klaus Fischer is on 12. So it does feel like Harry Kane could go third on the list at current projections. He scored 44 goals in his first season at Bayern. He scored 41 in his second and now 17 in 9 games. He is the most expensive signing in Bundesliga history and he is paying it back and more. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about, well, we both did, about Harry Kane, what he means to us, how he's playing at the moment, and kind of, Sam, I mean, we won't get to it just yet, but kind of compare him against some other greats of the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting subject for sure. You pitched it and I kind of scoffed at it initially, I'm not going to lie, but then I started looking at the list and it became a very interesting exercise as to looking at the great strikers over the last 10 to 15 years, but we'll mostly focus on the decade and where does he slot in. It is a very difficult task because they're all different shapes and sizes and played in different leagues, which is good fun, but it makes it quite difficult. Just before we get into a little bit more about Kane, a few more stats. Mm. He has already hit 20 goals and assists for the season. So he did that in September. Transfermarkt claimed that he has done this in a record low number of minutes. They say he's done it in 742 minutes. This does include 2 goals in the DFB Pokal and 1 in the Super Cup. So it's not a traditional League Plus Europe count. That would only be obviously 17. But Transfermarkt have been tracking the cup goals all along, and they say he's beaten Messi by about 8 minutes.
Wow.
Messi's best ever tally back in the year that he scored like 900 goals. So whichever way you drop this, and yes, the cup goals came against Visa Baden, or I can't remember exactly what the club name is, but you know the one I mean. It's amazing. To get that done before October technically starts is absolutely ridiculous. And also, the last 2 times I've watched him, he hasn't even really been playing up front, has he?
No, exactly. He is kind of playing, I think since the arrival of Luis Diaz this summer, who is playing that kind of line-stretching role. And then in the 10, because Musiala's been out, it's either been Elise or Serge Gnabry. And on the right-hand side, he's got one of the form players in the world right now, and Michael Elise as well, who is just one of the most breathtaking players to watch in the world right now as well. The way he can run so upwardly, move the ball so quickly, and also just pick out passes. And you know, when you watch a player, I always in my head go, oh, what would I do in that scenario? He always does what I would do better than I could ever do it, and I'm not actually doing it, if that even makes sense. His passing, his weight of pass, it's always on point. He can, yeah, open up a pitch with a dribble, with a pass, with an excellent shot as well. His shooting feels like it's gone really, really through the roof, and they are dovetailing really, really nicely. And it was interesting hearing Harry Kane talking about the relationship and how it has really improved, particularly in the last 6 months, and Bayern are really reaping the benefits of it so far. I suppose where to kind of go next is the kind of differences between Kane at Bayern and Kane at Spurs. And there's an argument, and people will say, you know, has he got better? I don't know whether he's necessarily got better, but there is worth just looking at some of the sort of numbers behind his start, particularly in the Bundesliga. So he became the first player to score 17 goals in his first 11 games of a Bundesliga season. He scored 22 in the first half of 23-24, which matched Lewandowski's record. 36 league goals in his first season. It was almost the perfect start. But Bayern didn't win the league. Bayer Leverkusen went unbeaten in the league and cup. And I think everyone went, oh, it's the Kane curse, all that kind of boring chat you see on social media. He's carried it over to Bayern. Isn't this hilarious? And actually, what he managed to do last season, in fewer games as well, but 26 goals in 31 games, becomes Bundesliga player of the season. And everyone just goes, now is the time to really respect the player that he is and the player he's been as well.
It is satisfying when a player like that finally wins the major honour, because you can just kind of put a lot of the rubbish to bed that you see over. And for Kane, it's been like a decade of just nonsense, right? And now he has the title, automatically, for some reason, people are like, well, now we can consider it. It's like, what, because it was his fault that Spurs didn't win anything, or his fault that Bayern lost to the unbeaten Leverkusen team? It's a strange ecosystem these kind of conversations sit in, which I'm glad to say that the three of us are able to rise above. But wow, does it make it easier when he's won a title?
Absolutely. I mean, one of our first ever episodes of The Truth we did was about Zlatan Ibrahimovic and whether he was kind of an all-time great. Kind of similar vibe to this podcast, and not winning a Champions League and missing out on numerous times of the Champions League and moving at the wrong times was seen as a crucial reason why he probably wasn't in that top echelon. So for Kane to have that title, absolutely vital. And his Champions League record now at Bayern as well, 23 goals in 27 games, really, really incredible stuff. And this is his 12th year of elite production. Unbelievable. He scored 11... For 11 consecutive seasons, he scored 24 goals in a season. It is just remarkable consistency. Interestingly, it's actually his shots on target that whilst he's been getting 60% of his shots on target this season, in the previous two seasons, he was at 43%, and he topped that three times in the Premier League. So he's not actually getting a vastly more amount of shots on target, but he is overperforming his XG to a greater extent than he even did at Spurs. So he's overperformed his XG by 5.2 per season at Bayern. At Spurs, it was 3.9 per season. So it's just that quality of finishing, and whether that's to do with, which we discussed in the Bundesliga episode a couple of weeks ago, the pace of defenders, the more space you're going to get on the break, etc. Those could all be factors as well. But it does feel like Kane's finishing with either foot has just gone completely through the roof. And podcasts that I listen to with Bundesliga aficionados, experts, people that watch him on a minute-by-minute basis do say that the common conception in the Bundesliga circles is that this is a better all-round player than Lewandowski, for sure, but also just maybe a slightly better finisher as well, which is pretty frightening to say.
I mean, he was always a ridiculous finisher, wasn't he? From the moment he actually broke through, the range of finishes that he had. I remember specifically a few headers in North London derbies that were absolutely crucial. I remember left foot, right foot. I remember 18 yards, 25 yards, different angles. Obviously, his penalty taking is the best in the world, maybe.
I would say one of the best in my lifetime.
I think he scored his last 18 penalties in a row. He was always really good at just smashing them into the corner. And now he's added the stutter step over the last couple of years. So now goalkeepers don't know if he's going to stutter or if he's just going to smash it. And there was a game recently, it was one of his hat-trick games, I forget which one, unfortunately, where he took two penalties in the same game. And one he stuttered and one he smashed. And he put them in the exact same spot in the net. So the goalies, what are they supposed to do? Honestly, incredible. And it's not all about the finishing with him either, is it? Of course, it's often about the other elements of his play. It's the dropping deep. It's the skill set of the 10, which is why he wore the number 10 on his back, because he thought he was more than a striker. He was right. His ability to thread the ball through to Son Heung-min, his ability to play off Dele Alli, a very complete forward, apart from not very fast, basically. Just not very fast. I do note that this season, you look back at all of his goals in Germany so far this season, of which there have already been many, it's quite a lot of fast breaks happening for Bayern, where he's kind of like sort of trundling along, not breaking his neck to get in the box, but just running at the right pace to stay out of the defender's eye line and just cracking into that box at the right time and just, you know, sliding it home like a 10 would. And you watch him in the last couple of games when Nicholas Jackson has played, and he is genuinely playing as the deep lying forward, almost the number 10, where Jackson's stretching and Elise's on the right. Incredible to watch him. Like, it kind of always felt like he was destined to drop into that position, in the way that Messi has fallen down the team a little bit as he's got a bit slower. But to actually see it starting to happen now is quite interesting. And there have been a few games I've watched this season where Harry Kane has received short passes from the goalkeeper. He's stood between the centre-backs. He stood where, like, Fernandinho once stood, splitting the centre-backs. What is happening? Of course, he can do it all.
He can. It's interesting you talk about his pace, and I totally agree with you, and I don't actually have any statistics to back this up, but my theory with
Kane
is...
Wait, do you want some sprint data?
I do, perfect,
I
okay.
Don't look it up, but I can
I'll put out my theory and we can test how wrong I am when the data is actually there. What I think about Kane is, yes, his top line speed is not very quick at all.
Yep.
But I actually think his acceleration to get to his top speed is quite good. So over 10 yards, he doesn't look painfully slow, and he still has a burst to get away from a marker. But if you ask him to run 40, 50 meters, most defenders are able to either keep up with him or catch him up. So that's kind of my theory on his pace. But you're right, it's the all-round quality in his game. Like, he has quickly turned into one of the best long-range passers in that position, at least that England has produced. I think Wayne Rooney springs to mind. Aside from that, we haven't really seen a striker with his range of passing, and he did it so effectively. I mean, there was years where Kane would be the facilitator for Son whilst also scoring over 20 goals a season, and doing it pretty comfortably. That one year under Conte in particular, they were just frightening together. So he's a phenomenal player.
Yeah, your hunch on that is basically correct. I mean, based on the physical data that you have for this season, his max speed is under 30 kilometers an hour, which is by elite standards pretty damn slow. But his short range stuff is not a problem.
Okay,
so
cool.
you're about right, and I don't think he's got any faster or any slower in 10 years. I think he's just been the same shape, size, weight and speed, which has been more than good enough to play at the way he wants to play at Premier League level. And his lack of top end speed has never cost him in terms of, have you ever seen a game where Harry Kane was just completely and utterly marked out of the game?
No.
It's, and you can, so some of the strikers we're going to end up talking about here where we compare them, there are ways you can remove them from the game. But with Kane, he's one of the few that he'll find a way one way or another because of the multifaceted skill set.
Yeah, absolutely. It does also feel like whenever I look at shot data, and people kind of complain about it, that, you know, there's too much data and people get too into shots, etc. But primarily, good strikers get a lot of opportunities. Ronaldo was the king of it. He'd be on 5, 6, sometimes even 7 shots per game as an average. Kane has always been around 3.5 and above throughout, since his debut. Like, this guy can get shots, and he can get shots in good positions. Interestingly, his shots in terms of his shot count at Bayern has gone up, but not by as much as you'd necessarily think. So his shots per game have gone 4.5 to 4 and 3.3, which probably suggests, as you say, that he is dropping slightly deeper this year as well. His final season at Spurs was at 3.3 as well. It never really affected his consistency in front of goal, though, that he wasn't getting as many shots in the Premier League than he was, particularly in his latter years, than he was when he first broke out as well. He scored 26 league goals in 24-25. He actually topped that tally 3 times in the Premier League. So it's not like his numbers have exploded at Bayern beyond all reckoning from where they were in the Premier League, if that makes sense. Like, he was remarkably consistent for a number of years. His XG per shot has gone up slightly, but only from 0.14 to 0.16. So it's not like people will just listen to this and be like, oh, he's now playing in the Farmers League. Of course, his shots and his games and his goals has gone up exponentially. It actually really hasn't. This is a guy who's been so consistent for a number of years, playing a pretty sort of similar role at both clubs as well, facilitating and finishing. So I don't think it's just the case of, which we might argue with some other players to come on to, that they peaked and then we didn't see enough of it either side of it. This guy's been at the top for 10 years.
So before we get onto those players, I just, from the way you talk about him in the last sort of 10 minutes discussing him, it does really strike me that you may feel like Harry Kane is thoroughly underrated by many.
I think he probably is against all-time greats. I think at the moment, there's very few people that wouldn't argue he's one of the top 2 strikers in the world, along with Erling Haaland. Lewandowski has been there in previous years. I'm not sure many people would have him right there right now. And maybe that's just on the basis of he had a few injury issues at the start of this season, and Barcelona have been kind of rotating their front line. And he's considerably older than Harry Kane as well. But do I think he's always had the respect he deserves for his international record, for his goals record, for what was at points a fairly, not average Spurs side, but definitely never an elite Spurs side, except for maybe a couple of years under Pochettino? No, I don't think he's got the credit.
Have there been any points over the last 10 years where you've looked at Kane and thought, God, you're not playing well, or wow, this is a bad stretch, or I want more from you here?
No, not particularly. Not across an entire season. I think he's had issues with his ankles around, I'm pulling it out of the back of my head now, around 2019, 2020, 2021.
That was whenever he played the Champions League final half fit.
Yes.
Was a problem.
And that is what we'll probably get onto as well. His record in the Champions League in the latter stages until he got to Bayern wasn't great. But then Spurs had one Champions League run in 2019. And aside from that, never really made a big impact on the competition. And then people will also question the amount of goals he scored in qualifying for major tournaments, or the group stages of major tournaments, or the amount of penalties he scored. People underestimate how difficult it is to score big penalties.
There have been a lot of penalties, to be fair. Six already this season, I think, and so he scored at least 18 for Bayern. It's a lot of penalties.
He's damn good at it.
He is very good. Yeah, just because you score them isn't a problem.
No.
I mean, look, I will struggle when I think about Harry Kane as a footballer, and when I appreciate Harry Kane as a footballer, I will think forever struggle to expunge his performances from the last Euros from my memory when he was not good. He was not good. But I also suspect he simply was not fit, and he really shouldn't have been on the pitch in the first place at points. But I got to the semi-final and the final, and the conversation was, he's going to start him, but he shouldn't, you know, and that's a real shame, because I think he's probably been let down by his own, well, by his manager to a point, but also his own, just like, footballers don't ever put their hand up and say, sorry, gaffer, I'm not fit, can't play the final. But it spoils the memory ever so slightly, and it's a big shame. And it's a big shame that he's got two of those on the resume, the Champions League final in 2019 and the Euros final, two of the biggest moments of his career, and he wasn't fit.
No.
It wasn't fit.
I think he's only played, I know he won the the Golden Boot in Russia, but I actually think he's only had one tournament where he's been at his absolute best. I think at Euro 2020, that COVID one, played in England, he was actually very close to his best.
And he played very well in the final too, even though he didn't quite go to plan, but he was working some of the best centre-backs in the world so hard in that game, which is hard to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, let's compare him to some other amazing strikers and start arguing. We're going to set the time range here, the time span of roughly 10 years. And I'm going to start by just listing off a few players that listeners may immediately jump to mentally, but time is a funny thing. The following players are so out of this time span, it is almost scary. So I'll start with Robin van Persie, who by 2015 was already at Fenerbahce. I remember him like it was yesterday. Wayne Rooney was at Everton, back at Everton by 2017. Drogba was at Galatasaray by 2013. Samuel Eto'o was definitely done. I think Radamel Falcao had about three strong years in this period before an ACL tear and some really bad loans to the Premier League kind of, well, sent his career down the drain in that
definitely
sense.
His reputation.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a load of names that we can rule out. And then just three more that are not strikers. Griezmann, not a striker. Lautaro Martinez, not a striker. Thomas Müller, not a striker.
Lautaro Martinez feels a little bit harsh.
Not a striker. Support forward at the most. Shadow striker.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I mean, look.
I mean, he's not on Kane level anyway.
Right, so it doesn't matter.
It's a
Doogie once again arguing for argument's sake. So now we can get to the actual contenders. And this is cool because we can probably build a nice list here. And we don't necessarily have to have a 1 to 8 or a 1 to 10, but we can figure out roughly where we think Kane slots by picking players who we think he's definitely better than or definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using the word definitely there. Like, this isn't going to be an impossible challenge, but we'll try and build the list. So let's start with Romelu Lukaku. He's going to be, I suspect, on the fringes of this kind of list, where over the last 10 years, he's been probably one of the 10 best strikers. But Kane is better?
100%. 100%. Way more consistent. Lukaku deserves a lot of respect, particularly for his international record, which is frighteningly good. And he has had some truly elite seasons, even when he was really young as well. That season on loan at West Brom, he was very good for Everton. Even his numbers at United and a poor side were pretty good. That amazing season under Conte at Inter Milan. But he's not on Kane's level in terms of consistency.
Okay, I agree with you. Cavani, actually, a lot of this time span, some of Cavani's best years filter into. So from him as well?
Loved Cavani for a 4 or 5 year stint. Again, we talked about underrated for Kane. Cavani was definitely underrated at the time. Phenomenal. And also, when Ibrahimovic then left PSG, really stepped into that kind of main man sort of persona and absolutely nailed it as well. Was very good when he came to the Premier League, despite being totally past it, showing his enduring quality.
Playing for a ridiculous team that could not function.
For sure.
Whatsoever.
So, yeah, I like Cavani. Again, I don't know whether... Maybe it was the clubs he played for at the times he played for them. Napoli, PSG, Uruguay not getting as far in international tournaments as they potentially should have. Probably just not on Kane's level.
Probably. I'd say of all the players we're going to talk about, there may not be anyone on this list that moved as well or as cleverly as Edinson Cavani, but they all finished better.
Yeah.
And that might be his downfall here. You mentioned him there, Zlatan. incredible when you actually look back at it. Obviously, he's been around or was around for so long. It's basically two decades at the top level. So immediately in your mind, you think, well, no, he'd be before this. His peak would have been before this time span. But even as recently as 2022, he was a very important player in an AC Milan team that won a title. So obviously he overlaps through with Kane here back into the United days and the PSG days. So Kane versus Zlatan?
Zlatan's CV when we went through it last year is frighteningly good. And the longevity is there for sure. Who did I prefer to watch in terms of aesthetics? Zlatan, probably. But who would I back to? I mean, how does this circumstance even come around? But like 20 goals to save my life, who would get there quicker? I think Kane.
That's not how you've done the rest of your list, is it?
No, it's not.
20 goals to save my life.
It's just who did I think was more consistently... Who do I think is more consistent in front of goal? Kane. Who is more entertaining to watch? Zlatan. Who is a better dribbler? Zlatan. Who is more creative? Probably Zlatan, but Kane, I don't know. It's so tight, but I think Kane.
So here's the problem. Making like absolute statements with these guys is tough. Mm. And like you can talk about their respective strengths. You can talk about their respective downfalls. End of the day, it's going to be some personal preference and some gut feel. And it's very difficult to separate two players that are so good. But ultimately, you prefer one or the other. And there's no right answer or no wrong answer. But I think I also agree that I'd have Kane above Zlatan.
It feels bold, but I'm sticking with it as well.
Yeah. Okay, so far we've got Lukaku, Cavani and Zlatan all below Kane.
Mm-hmm.
So Kane's still alive.
He's still alive. He's fighting.
Diego Costa?
Way above. I mean, respect for Diego Costa, particularly, you know, that season... Well, season and a half at Chelsea and that brilliant season at Atletico Madrid before he joined, but not on Kane's level.
All right, that's the starter finished.
Mm.
So the waiter can now bring in the main course, and these are the big boy names. This is where it actually gets tough.
Yes.
Zlatan may have given you a small dilemma there, but you wait for these boys. Okay, I'm going to start with what I actually think is the weakest player in this ridiculous class of forwards, and it's Sergio Aguero, who scored about 150 Premier League goals in the time span that we are talking about. And he left the Premier League in about 2022. So Aguero and Kane, very different footballers. I personally, as you well know by now, the type of forward that I tend to prefer is going to be someone like Kane. So for a player that doesn't have all of those elements to his game, like Aguero, to actually outshine him, in my view, they're going to have to be unbelievable at certain elements. And while I think Aguero was an amazing penalty box finisher, I do feel like some weaknesses in his game did show up over time, despite the goals. And I'm still keeping Kane alive here. And I would say that he's better than Aguero, which kind of feels really weird to say, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I came to the same conclusion. I think it depends how much sort of credence you give to trophies as well. Aguero's trophy cabinet is really pretty impressive, especially given the fact he came to Man City not super old by any stretch, not even, you know, he was in a decent age, but he'd spent a decent amount of time.
Well, they weren't the behemoth, were they?
Well,
they,
exactly.
He was the start of it.
For sure.
One of the starts.
But he ended up with 5 Premier League titles, an FA Cup, 6 League Cups. He loved the League Cup. That's a record.
Go on, Sergio.
Along with Fernandinho. But he also, you know, won a Europa League with Atleti before he arrived. He won a Copa America with Argentina, which got to be taken into account as well. Although
sticker
by
there
that
from
stage,
Jack at the Europa League.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. I heard
pain.
It.
That was. I didn't think it was going to happen, but that was pain. I know you're both going to make this argument. I'd have Aguero over Kane.
Would you?
Yeah, 100%. Like, as in that, again, it goes down to personal preference. And yep. I totally understand where you're coming from, but that is like one of my kind of players. Like someone, a bit of a fox in the box, but with an incredible work rate as well on top of it. And that's very much my kind of striker. If you were giving me, you know, a player to, as you say, 20 goals to save my life, Aguero, I'd have ahead of Kane.
It's going to catch on. It sounded ridiculous at the time, but I can see it catching on. 20 goals to save my life, it's happening.
I'm going to turn the TV on next week and there's going to be a like a filler program on my Sky Sports channel. Yeah. 20 goals to save my life with Dini Critchley, where he just goes around the country and just...
Who's your guy?
Challenges people.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
I think also, we talk about Kane's consistency, you know, that 12th year of, you know, elite production. Aguero scored over 20 goals in 11 out of 13 seasons between 2007-08 and 2019-20. Mm. He scored over 30 goals 5 times for Man City. Kane has done so 7 times for Bayern and Spurs. But he's not far off. He's really not far off. Mm. I, like you, think Kane is a much better all-round player. But Aguero was almost more thrilling to watch. His movement in the box, the excitement, the power he could generate with the shots. Mm. He didn't look like as much of a footballer, if that even makes sense. I loved him. I absolutely loved him. But I am putting Kane through.
Still alive. I told you this is the main course.
Yeah.
Told you. Okay. Someone that you can relate to a little bit more strongly with regard to the player comparisons, Lewandowski. Mm. I think this is really interesting because, especially earlier in Lewandowski's career, probably not the passer that Kane was, but in terms of dropping off the line and facilitating play, linking with wingers and midfielders, and putting a shift in terms of actually getting the ball up the pitch and then getting into the box and then scoring like 40 goals a season, there are some similarities there. And in a way that you can't say for someone like Edinson Cavani or Sergio Aguero, like they're fundamentally just different people, different players. Whereas Lewandowski and Kane profile a little bit more closely. So it makes it a bit more interesting. How do you feel about these two?
We talk about consistency. 11 seasons of scoring over 30 goals. 8 scoring over 40. He scored over 50 twice in a season. Absolutely insanely good numbers.
Par for the course in this category of player, though. There's about 6 or 7 of them, and it really is. If you actually just look at the numbers, you just drown.
Yeah, I feel like Lewandowski, of all the players we're going to talk about, though, is the numbers guy, like the sheer weight of numbers. Even at Barcelona in the last couple of years, as what is he now, 37? He's still putting up pretty impressive numbers. It's really pretty remarkable. It's also his record for Poland, 86 goals for Poland. That's mental. I'm so impressed by him. I mean, what a phenomenal career. I also like the fact that he took a chance going to Barcelona. I say take a chance, one of the biggest clubs in the world, you know, one of the top two. But he still, you know, had to go to a different league and re-establish himself at the top end. He went through an almost year-long period after the World Cup in 2022 where he was really struggling. Brings it back last season as well. There's so much to his game. He looks after his body exceptionally well. I think Kane won't be as good as Lewandowski at his age. I would be surprised, or at least not scoring at the same rate. I think Lewandowski versus Kane is much tighter for me than Aguero versus Kane. And I'm almost tempted to give it to Lewandowski.
But are you actually going to do that?
For the sake of the podcast, can I call it a truce? No.
How about we come back to it at the end?
Why don't we come back to it at the end? Okay.
I think I'm taking Kane over Lewandowski by a hair. What? By a hair. I think I am. Yeah. I think so. Lewandowski doesn't have the passing range.
He doesn't have the passing range.
He doesn't have the passing range.
He doesn't, but he also should have a Ballon d'Or in the cabinet.
Yeah.
And so
robbed.
There is an element of this, I think, which is interesting that, you know, we're talking, you said at the very top of the podcast that Harry Kane is on like par or just broken a kind of early record of Messi's 11-12 season, which was a Ballon d'Or winning season. Mm. If Harry Kane continues on this form for the entirety of the season, and, you know, there are trophies that follow it up, which feels very plausible, you know, at this point yeah. of the season. Bayern look probably the best team put together, I think, so far. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go and win it all or anything like that. But, you know, what we've seen so far, so good, right? Yeah. And that's without Musiala in the mix. So, like, there is a potential there that if Harry Kane goes and wins a Ballon d'Or at the end of this season and that kind of comes into it, not that individual awards should matter to the same extent. You know, we're talking about this from a nostalgic perspective, and other players on this list may have won them if it wasn't so Messi, Ronaldo dominated at that period, which is fine. But for me, I think that Lewandowski has had a season better than Harry Kane has ever had. And if you're putting it in that context, is it like it's just something probably to put into the conversation?
Yeah,
the
no, least. I agree. I was going to probably broach that, which is, you know, that I felt really strongly about that year that Lewandowski was robbed of a Ballon d'Or. And then they made a new award the following year to make him happy. Was it best striker? Best
something like that.
Best forward or something.
Yes, the Gerd Müller Award.
Yeah, and it's like, it was basically a sorry. But it was a bit of a South Park sorry, wasn't it? The BP episodes where Cthulhu rises from the ground and takes over humanity. Like, it's too late. It doesn't matter. But unfortunately, Lewandowski deserved a Ballon d'Or that year and he didn't get it. Kane cannot claim that. He might by the end of the season. It is interesting. It's not the be-all and end-all because we're talking about a 10-year period. But of all of the forwards we have mentioned so far, just looking down the list briefly, no one that we've talked about has ever had a year like Lewandowski had.
He's the numbers guy.
That season.
I think there's also a strong argument that although Dortmund are significantly closer to Bayern than Spurs are to any side in the Premier League in terms of size of club, Lewandowski got Dortmund far closer to glory and actually won two Bundesliga titles with them than Kane ever did at Spurs. Mm. And maybe that should be taken into account that Kane and Spurs was a nearly story, as we've already touched upon.
Yes, but he's one of 11 players.
Sure.
So again, you have to temper it. It's the same. Yeah, it's tough. It's
maybe
tough.
Lewandowski had a better supporting cast at Dortmund. But I still think that probably has to be taken into account.
Okay. So you're...
I'm putting Kane through just.
Okay. Okay. I think I'm about to tap out here on where Kane moves next, just based on the names I've got left on the list. Where shall I start? Okay, interesting. Let's start with this. Let's go to Erling Haaland.
Okay.
Erling Haaland. Instinctively, when I put his name on the list, I thought, no, he's not been in this time span for enough time. Banging goals in 2019, Erling Haaland for Salzburg. And then he joined Dortmund in the winter of 2020, banged them in there too. And it wasn't long until he was equaling Ronaldo's record for Manchester City and winning a treble. So he's actually, even though he hasn't got 10 years in his time span, he's got more like 6 or 7. He's a viable contender here.
Well, he's scoring goals at a rate that we've never seen before by anyone. By absolutely anyone. And yeah, he does definitely have a sort of a claim for this for sure. I mean, 316 goals in 364 club and country games at 25 years old. 25! 316 goals at 25. It's remarkable. And I was thinking this the other day, you know, Kane and Haaland are completely different players in many ways. And Kane's range of passing, etc. We've already covered it. But Haaland, I'm not necessarily even comparing this to Kane. Haaland's touch before he takes a shot is nearly always completely perfect. And his build-up to shooting is, for a lanky guy that looks quite unnatural and kind of stoops over the ball, he's not aesthetically pleasing.
Doogie's talking about me again, Jack.
But his final two touches before he shoots, whether he gets around the ball, whips it round it, chips it, he's so, so on point. Yep. You never see a poor Haaland touch in the build-up.
That's rare. It's very rare.
It's very rare. You never really see him offside either. Like he has really nailed what he is good at, and he has maximised that to an ability to a level that we've never really seen before. Mm. So yes, Kane is a better footballer. He is a more entertaining footballer to watch. I mean, unless you like acrobatic finishes, to be fair, because Haaland's very good at that. But on the basis of the last 10 years, I'm going with Kane. But Haaland, I think if we did... Haaland will probably be remembered in fonder memories in the next 50 years.
50 years?
In 50 years' time, reflecting on what Haaland is expected to go on to achieve. I think Haaland could end up winning, I don't know, 4 Champions Leagues, score close to 1,000 career goals.
I was going to say, like, Haaland feels like the only person who's ever going to break the Pelé record, inverted commas, that, like, of 1,000 career goals. Like that feels very doable for Erling Haaland at this point in his career, which is terrifying for everyone else, I think, really.
So even though it has been a shorter time span, I am already ready to put Haaland above Kane in my list, even though it's more like 7 years compared to 10, just because the years that Haaland has actually been performing for have been so overwhelmingly ridiculous. And because the athleticism is so ridiculous, the acrobatics are crazy. The goal numbers are astounding, and his single-mindedness and obsession with scoring goals is so terrifying to me that I think if I don't put him above Kane on the list, he might find me. So I'm already that smitten with Haaland as a striker that even though he doesn't have the passing range, which I just knocked Lewandowski for in comparison to Kane, I'm already there with Haaland. I'm already putting him above Kane.
Also, 52 goals in 53 games as your side wins the treble. Mm. Kane hasn't done that yet. Again, it comes back to the Champions League. Like, we're on really tough, trying to find the sort of minutiae between players. Having that sort of season as your side wins the treble, that's pretty special.
Okay, where do you fall on this?
On the last 10 years, across the entire period, I'm still going with Kane. But Haaland, as I said, will probably have a better career.
Okay. We've not got many names left, unless I've missed out a couple of absolute whoppers. But let's go to another player who is in his mid-20s, but somehow has already completed, or no, is into his 10th full season as a professional footballer. And it is Kylian Mbappe, who was 26.
You didn't call Lautaro Martinez a 9, and you're calling Kylian Mbappe a 9.
Where's he playing right now?
He is playing, but I mean, so is Lautaro Martinez.
No, it's not.
Lautaro Martinez has been more of a 9 across his career than Kylian Mbappe.
I thought we agreed that Lautaro isn't even as good as Kane, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but also there's the element with Lautaro, I think, that like he's barely ever played without a strike partner.
Sure.
Aside from at the international level, and that hasn't been great for him generally, Copa America last summer aside, like, him leading the line as a single point, which is kind of what we're discussing here, right? Like that number 9. I love Lautaro to absolute death. But as in, if you don't have a player alongside him, I don't think it works anywhere near to the same extent. And therefore, like, as in, whilst I slightly disagree with Sam's discussion of Lautaro not as a striker, like, I absolutely do take the point that he probably shouldn't be in this conversation in the same way.
I don't think he deserves to be in this conversation anyway. I can't believe
you're still arguing about it.
I'm still arguing about it. But Mbappe... Okay. Let's move on.
No, let's not move on.
Well, Mbappe... basically made it abundantly clear he didn't want to play as a 9, and he's playing unbelievably there at the moment. I think he's probably been the best player in Europe so far this season. I mean, numbers wise you'd go with Kane, but I think Mbappe's just been so good. But putting him in a 9 discussion doesn't feel quite right to me when he's played so much of his best football on the left and wants to play on the left.
I do understand that point. I will take that point, but he has been playing 9 for like
2 years,
a year at least, if not, and he has scored a lot of goals this season. Yeah. Like, he looks very at home, albeit in what is often seen as a bit of a strike partnership, as a bit of a 2, to Jack's point. So, okay, look, we can be diplomatic and we can leave him aside. If he was allowed in the list, he would be above Kane for me.
Yes.
I think he's like frightening footballer.
Comfortably.
So he would be in, but we'll just leave him aside because you don't want to make the call.
No. He's a better footballer than Harry Kane, for sure.
Okay. Luis Suarez.
Oh, see, this is really painful because Luis Suarez put up one of my favourite seasons of all time in 2013-14.
This is when he scored 100 goals against Norwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2013.
2013-14.
Just outside the rough, time scan. I mean, you can have it. Like, if you want to include that in your analysis of Luis Suarez, I think that's completely fine.
Yeah. I mean, Kane never made me feel like Luis Suarez did. Like, has never... That sounds very sexual. We'll carry on. But he really didn't. Like, watching Suarez in his pomp, particularly at Liverpool, because at that particular time I had more access to English football, was unbelievable. And he's actually worked for Ajax before then. I was looking it up today. In his final full season at Ajax, okay, he played 48 games. He scored 49 goals.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's in the
24 assists and 49 goals in his final full season. Why did he end up at Liverpool? No offence to Liverpool, but Liverpool at that particular time, why didn't one of the bigger clubs go for him? It is bonkers. He should have been at Barcelona from the get-go. Anyway,
Everyone was still really, really scared about Mattia Kesman.
Yeah.
That's why he ends up at Liverpool.
How far past the Afonso Alves disaster was this?
Not far enough, apparently.
Yeah. The Eredivisie tax. We should do an episode on that.
I mean, fair play. I mean, again, this doesn't quite fit into the last 10 years, but his work at Liverpool, he took them from 52 points the season he joined to 84 in his 3 seasons there. He then goes to La Liga, obviously, with Barcelona. 4 La Ligas, 4 Copa del Reyes, a Champions League. He won the 2011 Copa America as well. Again, not in this range, but he won at international level with Uruguay. 2 European Golden Boots. I think people that are younger than us will unfortunately remember Suarez kind of by how he looks on the pitch now, and it's a little bit unfair.
He limps around, doesn't he?
Limps around. He really shouldn't probably be playing. He's talking about how difficult it is to literally play and move. Yeah.
Although he's doing some magnificent things with the ball for Inter Miami. Like some of the passes and plays and the dummies and like... Oh,
at walking pace. It's really impressive.
He's still doing some pretty good numbers as well.
He's still
putting up the numbers.
For sure. But... in terms of this Kane versus Suarez debate, I'm sorry, I'm having Suarez above Kane.
Oh, 100%. I mean, Suarez for me is a stunning footballer. And even if it doesn't quite, the Norwich catalogue, the 2013-14 is slightly outside of it. But bear in mind, he goes to the World Cup off the back of this season and then he joins Barcelona. So like 2014 summer, that's the start of his Barcelona career. And then a year later, he wins the treble with Luis Enrique's all-conquering Messi, Suarez, Neymar team. They were absolutely outrageous. So a really strong portion of this is Barcelona, a title with Atletico Madrid, which
good,
was
good point,
awesome. And it's only right at the end of this timescale that he starts to slow down. And for me, that's enough. Suarez is quite clearly better. And his ridiculous work rate and tenacity and energy was so infectious. And I just loved that he had that underpinning incredible talent. But I wouldn't say he's the best striker of the last 10 years, because you talked about how Erling Haaland sets himself up for shots perfectly every time. Sometimes Luis Suarez would kick the ball and it would just go quite far by accident. And he just had that slight moment in him every now and then where it just looked a bit elephant touch, which it's just like the 1%, and it's just enough for him to be knocked off the pedestal, for me anyway. Karim Benzema.
Oh, yeah.
Karim Benzema, I think, is my number one.
He was definitely, yeah. I think he is. Yeah, it's him or Suarez. I think I was looking at this earlier. You know, everyone will remember that Ronaldo signing, and it's difficult to argue that that's not Real Madrid's best signing of all time. But Benzema's got to be right in the conversation for Real Madrid. 35 million euros he cost in 2009. He won 4 La Ligas, 3 Copa del Reyes, 5 Champions Leagues, and the 2022 Ballon d'Or. He scored over 20 goals in 11 of 13 seasons for Real Madrid. He ends up, and I know this is a lot of figures, but 354 goals, 155 assists, Sam, in 658 games for Real Madrid. He is their second top scorer of all time behind the freak that is Ronaldo. He's their second top assister of all time. And this is where the difference is with Kane for me. The clutch moments, the Champions League knockout games. 32 goals in 67 Champions League knockout games. That's only topped by Lewandowski with 34 in 51, Messi with 49, and Ronaldo with 67. For context, Kane, who hasn't played nearly as many Champions League knockout games, he's only played 19, has scored 10 in that time. Benzema carried Real Madrid, and well, he facilitated Real Madrid during the Bale
the
Ronaldo
BBC
eras.
Era, yeah.
Then he carried Real Madrid. Mm. Kane has not yet done that with Bayern. He hasn't done that with Bayern.
I mean, I wouldn't wish that on him. Like, no striker should have to carry a team of the stature of
a Real
Madrid.
But when they do, it is epic.
Yeah, and that's why Benzema is my number one. Although you just mentioned him there, and I'd like to think that I've been very smart and clickbaited the audience here, but like, genuinely, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, he played up front.
Yeah.
But when did it start?
I was going to bring this up.
And are we in the right...
Were you including him?
Are we in the right time frame? So... At what point did he start to play up front? He obviously did it for Juventus. So that was in 2018 when he joined Juventus. So it started at Real Madrid.
Yeah, probably so around 2015.
Probably right in range here for Ronaldo. And it was all the way up until basically Manchester United where he was, I mean, he scored 100 goals for Juventus. It was the third different club that he had achieved that for, which is quite ridiculous. So that takes you from probably roughly 2015, 2016 to 2021. It's a good 8-year span. And in 2021, he joins Man United, and that's kind of where it starts to fade a bit. And I'm not going to start talking about figures at Al Nassr.
Although the first season at Manchester United, his numbers were very respectable.
18 league goals. I mean, in 30. I mean, yeah, fantastic.
Very
but not. You didn't get the feeling from him, did you? That you used to. So he's probably got 8 years in this category. So if that's the case, he has to go in ahead of Kane.
Yeah. Across this period, I don't know. The last 5 years really do. Maybe this is just recency bias. But.
It has been tough to watch him in the last 3-4 years at times.
Oh,
it has.
But he has like at still World Cups scored a lot of stuff. Goals for Portugal outside of World Cups and major tournaments.
But the last two tournaments that Portugal have been to, the whole narrative around the team is, wouldn't they be better without Ronaldo? Could they possibly be?
Still never get rid of him in the intermittent time.
No.
He'll be playing in America.
I get it. But if that's the conversation going into the tournament, then you can't be this... You're clearly not this like untouchable... impenetrable striker, right? Mm. Like no one was asking that question about Lionel Messi, for example, to draw a horrible comparison.
But they were asking that question about Karim Benzema.
Is that because he kept falling out with people, though?
Potentially a little bit, but like there was always a discussion around Karim Benzema, you know. And so whilst we can make that point about Ronaldo, and I think that you're probably right to make it, like if you're having Benzema as undisputed number one, to not include that in the conversation around him, but to include it around the conversation around Ronaldo, I feel is disingenuous.
Well, I don't know if I can have Benzema as my undisputed number one anymore, because I've just remembered that Cristiano Ronaldo played football.
I'm still sticking with Benzema across the that period. I think if it was 2010 to 2020, obviously Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. But he did, yeah. I just think Benzema also, you know, this seems stupid when we're about to talk about Ronaldo, but aesthetics for Benzema versus the Kane, Lewandowski, Suarez even. Benzema was like silk to watch. His touch was unbelievable. The way he manipulated defences, particularly pulling into that left-hand side channel, the kind of a Aubameyang zone that we were talking about last week with the Aubameyang, that was also Benzema as well.
Yeah.
Big moments, stepping up, creative, composed in massive moments for the club, carried big, big sides, carried Real Madrid. The pressure of playing for Real Madrid is enough, let alone having to be the main man. I think he was unbelievable during this period. And yeah, Ballon d'Or winner.
Well, that's fine. Look, our job here is not to say who is the number one striker of the last decade, Ronaldo or Benzema. That's not the point of the podcast. The point is, where does Harry Kane sit? Who does he sit above and who does he sit below was where we wanted to get to. So you don't have to have a one and a two. You don't have to have a one, two, three. You just need to have a list of players that you're happy to put Kane above and a list of players that he sits below. So for me, based on the process of elimination that we've just gone through, I've got him above Lewandowski, Zlatan, Lukaku, Cavani, Costa, all those guys. But I've got him below Ronaldo, Haaland, Benzema, Suarez, and Mbappe, if you'll let me have him. And Aguero is below him. So looks like he's smack bang in the middle of about five each.
Yeah, I wouldn't change that too dramatically. I think next 10 years will obviously be Haaland. I think Haaland may be a little bit early on this, but the numbers are crazy. The one that I really struggle with is Lewandowski versus Kane, and I think it's because of their sort of stylistic similarities. Mm. And I said Kane at the time, I don't think that's really going to sit well with me for the next few days, and now it's out on the internet and in the podcast world. I don't know whether I'm comfortable with that, but...
Why do we sit here and say these things?
I'll have to live with it now. But it's very, very tight, and I think you can make a great claim for either of them.
Jack?
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar to you, apart from I think I have Aguero and Lewandowski above him.
Okay.
I think over the course of the last 10 years. Now, I think that there is scope for that to change. And I think that if we do a 2020 to 2030, you know, one of these in a couple of years, then Harry Kane probably pops up higher in the end of it. But in this time period, I think I've still got Aguero and Lewandowski ahead of him as well. I'd have him about seven.
All right. Against all odds, I was sat here thinking earlier today as I was preparing for this, I was thinking that in the end, I'm going to end up being probably the sourest on Harry Kane. I think I've got him the highest in my rough list here, because with you not allowing Haaland in there just yet, I think I've got about five better than him. You've got about six, and Jack has got about seven.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Means we've got him roughly in the right area, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think everyone was in pretty strong agreement. Benzema, Suarez, Ronaldo if you're counting him, and then probably Kane in that next batch.
Yeah, 100%. All right. That'll do for this week.
I'll do. I enjoyed that.
That was a well-spirited argument.
Yeah.
I mean, debate.
Look, don't get me on Lautaro again.
Oh, yeah. Not a striker.
That's the truth next week.
Is Lautaro Martinez a striker? That's a good episode. It's a short episode. The answer is no. Right. Doogie, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Jack, thanks as always.
Always a pleasure, Samuel.
And to you, Rank Squad, thanks again for listening. We'll see you soon.